It is the Tuesday morning show. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. And on Tuesdays, we take an in-depth look at natural resource-based issues important to our region. Today, thanks to our producer, Mark Jacobs, we are starting a new series on fires in Minnesota forests. Our guest is Brian Schwingel, Minnesota DNR Forest Health Program Coordinator. He's here to talk about current forest health risks and how they may relate to increased forest fire risk. He's here along with Mark Jacobs. Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Morning.
Morning.
Thanks for the invite.
You're welcome. Let's just start, Brian, with what your role is.
So I'm the Minnesota DNR Forest Health Program Coordinator, which just means I'm kind of the team lead for the forest health team. And I think for the general public, that the simplest explanation for what the DNR's Forest Health Team does is we're like the CDC for Minnesota's forests. We track problems that occur to the forests over time. But really, our bread and butter is troubleshooting problems for land managers. So if a forester sees something concerning out there in the woods, but they aren't sure what it is or if it's serious, they'll call us and we come out there and then we investigate and we tell them if it's a problem or not. And we track things over time. We run a annual aerial survey in an airplane. A lot of people think that like we can use drones or something to survey all of Minnesota's forests, but a drone might be able to cover, you know, like a township, and it's not efficient at all. So we use our good old fashioned airplanes. And we survey most of the forests of Minnesota every year. And again, by doing that, we can track things over time, allowing for forest managers to plan based off of data. And it also provides a lot of valuable information for researchers. And occasionally, we catch things early, like maybe a little oak wilt spot or maybe a burgeoning EAB infestation. Occasionally, we get lucky.
Mm-hmm. When are these flights and what you said, oak wilt spot and EAB, what else are you looking for?
Well, actually the flights are starting this week. As long as the weather, there's always weather complications. occasionally planes have to be fixed and the pilot and DNR pilots do all kinds of other things too. But, we were going to start on Monday. Looks like we're going to start later this week. And this time of year, we're going to be looking for forest tent caterpillar defoliation, kind of east of Mille Lacs and a little south. And then we'll transition to surveying the arrowhead, mapping spruce budworm. And then later in the summer, we'll transition to the northwest, where we focus on mapping dying tamaracks from eastern larch beetle, generally. And then in August, we'll kind of shift to the central part of the state and look for oak decline. Sometimes we're lucky and we see some oak wilt too.
Interesting. And the timing suggests that there's phenology involved, which is what I'm mostly interested in. But you're planning these flights to expose yourselves to the most apparent damages at different times because of different pests.
That's correct. Phenology really plays into it.
Yeah, very nice.
Well, yep. Brian, let's talk about some of the biggest current or potential forest health threats that we have in the region.
Sure. So I actually mentioned them. Spruce budworm and eastern larch beetle for, you know, the northern third of the state are the two big current active problems for the forests. You could also throw in forest recovery from the 2021 and 2023 drought. And you could also throw in, of course, emerald ash borer, although emerald ash borer at this point isn't having like a landscape level impact to northern Minnesota at all. It just has a bunch of scattered little very localized infestations. But again, the eastern larch beetle outbreak in tamarack is huge. It's been going on since 2001. And then spruce budworm, it's a native caterpillar that preferentially feeds on balsam fir. It also likes white spruce. It's been going strong the last few years in the Arrowhead region. And interestingly, both of those critters are native critters.
So if I'm a native landowner, private landowner, how would I recognize if this were happening? What is the physical signs of, say, a spruce budworm infestation or the larch beetle? What would I see that would tip me off that I need to contact you guys and say, hey, this is bad?
So to recognize spruce budworm, it's a caterpillar, and it really likes to feed on the tops of balsam fir, larger balsam fir in particular. And it feeds on the new shoot growth. And so right up, like in the month of June, they'll start noticeably feeding. And towards the end of June and early July, a lot of the foliage that they've been feeding on, they're messy feeders. And so they'll clip off the needles. The needles will, since they're clipped off, they'll desiccate and they'll turn orange, and they'll kind of get caught up in webbing that the caterpillars make toward on the ends of the branches. So basically, if you have a bunch of older balsam fir and the tops kind of look orangish in June or early July, there's a very good bet that that's spruce budworm. Now with eastern larch beetle, it's a native bark beetle. It infests tamarack trunks. And the best time actually to look for that is in late winter, February, early March. If you're walking around a tamarack swamp and you see a bunch of kind of maroon, like lighter maroon colored trunks, that's a very good indication that your tamaracks are infested with bark beetles, because birds feed on the bark beetles overwintering under the trunk, and they fleck off the outer bark, exposing the like lighter maroon colored inner bark on tamaracks.
You see me nodding. You and I are zooming, so you can see me nodding my head. And I have a lot of tamarack. I have 40 acres. And probably 25 of it is lowland and a lot of tamarack. And I have a lot of tamarack that are quite maroon right now. And were, yeah. It's an ongoing thing. What seems to happen at my house is that they come in, they wipe out the tamarack, and then the tamarack come back, and the tamarack get to be maybe 25 years old. They get to be maybe 30 feet high, 40 feet high, and then the larch beetles come back, and again, everything gets set back, and then they start all over again. So,
another thing that's happening that actually phenologically right now with tamarack is that there is a non-native caterpillar called the larch case bearer that if your listeners Google an image of larch case bearer, they're one of the cutest little caterpillars you can find. And they attach themselves, they're very tiny, to a tamarack needle, and they'll just kind of like suck the chlorophyll, the green stuff, out of the needle, and it makes the needles look yellow. And you can actually see that right now, right around Grand Rapids, probably all over, all over Minnesota. Right now they're feeding on tamarack.
Wow.
That stresses the tamarack slightly, and research at the University of Minnesota has shown that large case bearer kind of slightly weakens tamarack and makes them a little bit more susceptible to larch beetle attack.
We're speaking with Brian Schwengel and Mark Jacobs this morning. We're talking about forest health and its effect on fire. We receive support from UPM Blend and Paper, integrating bio and forest industries into a sustainable and innovation-driven future. More information at upmpaper.com. Brian, with this kind of attack on our forests, and I know that Mark had talked about this originally, we were talking about fire, and what's the relationship there?
Well, there seems to be a pretty tight relationship between fire and spruce budworm impact. Last year, we mapped about 715,000 acres of forest in the Arrowhead region, defoliated by spruce budworm. And that was the most we mapped since 1961. And what happens with spruce budworm is it goes through these outbreaks in a given area. The outbreak lasts about 10 years, and then it moves on. And it's been, spruce budworm has been cycling through the Arrowhead in these outbreaks since at least the 1950s. And it's very active right now. And what happens is after 3 to 5 years of pretty heavy feeding, you know, where the caterpillars are feeding on the new growth, eventually the tops of the balsam firs die, and then eventually the trees die. And about 5 to 8 years after trees start dying, the risk of wildfire due to all these dead trees is maximized. And interestingly, the 2021 Greenwood fire and the 2025 Camp House fire occurred right at that period where wildfire risk is maximized due to all these dying balsam fir. There's a link there. You know, the spruce budworm impact, all those dead trees, it changes the behavior of wildfire. It makes it more serious. It burns hotter. Conditions on the ground are drier because you have all these dead trees that aren't shading the understory, so you have lower humidity levels in the understory. You have balsam fir dead bark that can kind of get blown ahead of the fire as it's burning and start fires ahead of the main fire called spotting. And then, of course, you have this just tangle of dead balsam fir and white and spruce on the ground, which makes fighting the fire a lot more dangerous, more complicated for wild and firefighters on the ground. Now, that's not to say, though, that, you know, the budworm lit the match. The conditions that started those fires you had extreme fire weather, super low humidities, windy conditions. And so those fires would have started regardless of budworm or not. It's just that the impact of the budworm almost certainly made those fires burn hotter and more.
What would a private landowner like myself, if I started to see the tops of some of my balsams dying back, what can I do? Can I go in and take those trees out? Will that take the budworm away, or are they just going to move to another balsam nearby? How do I handle this?
It's tough. It's a tough situation because, you know, balsam fir, it's a native part, native component of the ecosystem. I mean, it grows all over. It's a very successful tree in the northern forests. I think that the key to so many of our forest health problems is tree diversity. If forest landowners can figure out a way to diversify the forests, that's key. That's way easier said than done, though. Because, you know, cutting down trees, it's hard work. It takes a lot of time. If you contract it out, it's expensive. But, there's just two main recommendations for spruce budworm. If we're talking about a forest, it's diversity. You know, you want to hopefully keep your forest less than 50% of balsam fir. And then also, as balsam fir grows older, it becomes more and more enticing for spruce budworm. And trees over 40 years of age, actually, that's when there's a risk of spruce budworm defoliation. So if you can somehow keep the age of the balsam fir across your property younger and fewer balsam firs, that's going to go a long ways in terms of minimizing the impact of spruce budworm on your property.
My dad was a forester, and whenever we walked through the land and we came across a small balsam, he would just prune it with his fingers because he knew that it would become a Christmas tree then, and we always liked the balsams. And he would just kind of randomly prune these small balsams as we walked through to kind of keep some of them as Christmas trees. So that's another way,
Brian,
you can...
having fought peat fires in my younger days, I just wonder, Should we be concerned about all the dead tamarack being a potential fire risk and causing some havoc?
That's a good question, Mark. I actually took a look at Minnesota DNR wildfire data, and I coupled it with our larch beetle data. And what's really interesting is if you take a look at the five biggest fires in our impacted tamarack forests, in the early stages of infestation versus the later stages, the later stages fires are three times larger than the early stage of infestation. So, in other words, it sure seems like if you have a large beetle infestation, your risk of having a bigger fire is more, which isn't surprising, because if you have a bunch of dead standing tamarack that's not on the forest floor decaying and all moist, it's tinder. And yes, but from my understanding, I don't have personal experience fighting peat fires, but I understand peat fires are present a big, unique challenge in the wild and firefighting world.
Indeed.
Brian, before we go, tell us, do you have hope for the future regarding forest health risks?
Oh yeah. I think that, one thing I see is that people are trying to diversify more their forests. I think, when Dutch elm disease came through in the 70s, like in communities, what communities frequently did was just plant a bunch of ash. And now here we sit facing a wall of ash to deal with. But I think that diversification is more on people's minds, both in communities and in the forests. And also, some of our native tree species are incredibly flexible, and they're going to do okay in a future climate. Trees like white pine, bur oak, and actually quaking aspen, they're incredibly flexible trees. They grow on all different sorts of sites. Another thing too is that, like, in the past, we've had these large problems come in, and they haven't caused trees to go extinct. So you take a look at Dutch elm disease, and it's like, do we have fewer large elms today than we did in the 60s? Absolutely. But elm is still quite common, and things like oak wilt, it's like oak wilt is creeping up into the Northwoods. That's not good. It's annoying. It reduces property values like that. But oak wilt, it can be prevented. It can definitely be managed. I think what I see a lot of time is people focus on things that actually aren't a big problem, like, for example, anthracnose or apple scab. People really get upset when the leaves on their trees get diseased, but it's not a big deal. There are bigger fish to fry. So there's definitely some hope. There's native resistance out there for things like emerald ash borer, Dutch elm disease. It's out there. Mother Nature is resilient.
Brian, thanks for joining us. It was a wonderful conversation. I learned a great deal. I knew about the maroon bark of the tamarack. And
Yeah.
I'll be removing some of those and hopefully getting them into my firewood pile before they
Yes.
become
Well,
native
I
firewood.
very much appreciate the invite. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Mark, as always, thank you. This was a great, great
Thanks.
interview.